Where do you see your career in 10 years? What are you doing now to help you get there? The sooner you start enhancing your skills, the sooner you'll be ready. That's why AARP has reskilling courses in a variety of categories like marketing and management to help your income live as long as you do.
That's right. AARP has a bevy of free skill building courses for you to choose from because the steps that you choose to take today will help you to love what you do in the future. And that's why the younger you are, the more you need AARP. Learn more at aarp.org/skills. In recent weeks, we've really focused on some ways that listeners can boost their income. So whether that's through starting your own side business and growing your network like Hala talked about, or when we talked with local realtor Alan about diving into investing in real estate, well, what better way to test the waters? While you are away, your home could also earn extra income.
That's right. Your empty space could be an Airbnb while you're traveling, because that's all you need to become an Airbnb host. It's a lot easier than you think, and you don't need to Airbnb your entire house. You could just host your extra spare room. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Supercharge your work decks with AI-powered Canva presentations. All you do is start with a prompt. You describe your presentation in a few words, and Canva presentations will generate captivating slides that you can then customize in seconds.
Canva presentations are designed for every workplace and every department. Whether you work in sales, marketing, HR, ops, and more, Canva presentations can generate any deck you want for work. Sales decks, marketing presentations, onboarding plans, you name it. Any department can save time on any presentation with AI.
Generate slides in seconds with Canva presentations at canva.com, designed for work.
Welcome to How to Money. I'm Joel.
And I am Matt.
And today we're talking work from home fairness, Roth 401k revamps, and Mr. Beast's debt dystopia.
Yeah, so how much of Mr. Beast's success do you think comes from the fact that he's named Mr. Beast?
Like, I don't think that's how he came out of the womb, though.
It's just a very, I don't know, it sounds like you're owning it, if you're going to call yourself
Mr. Beast. Wouldn't that be rad, though?
Mr. Beast.
If he did, like if your
that
parents
was his actual legal first name.
Had so much belief in you that they were like, we're going to call you Mr. Beast.
It makes me think of some of UGA's.
You got a lot to live up to. You're either going to fail hard or succeed well.
Football player, like Champ. Like I'm thinking of the, like the Bailey brothers, Champ Bailey, Boss. It was Champ and Boss.
That's right.
Back in the late 90s, early 2000s.
They lived up to the expectations.
To a certain extent, you rise up to the occasion. Maybe you fulfill your destiny, perhaps. I don't know. Depends on how you believe and all that kind of stuff.
I got to say, I feel like I'm living out the name Joel perfectly well.
Man, this is our Friday flight. And in fact, we're going to talk about personal finance and the different stories in the news that pertain to it. One of which I guess we'll touch on quickly here, like Bitcoin. It's been in the news recently.
Yeah,
it's been on a,
you can buy Bitcoin now via ETF.
Or, well, it's been in the news for a while because basically over the past 12 months it's been rising on the rise as folks were expecting or hoping maybe that Bitcoin was going to be able to be purchased in like a mainstream brokerage. But yeah, that officially got passed earlier this week.
Well, yeah, the SEC finally gave approval.
They
right?
approved
and,
it. Uh-huh.
And so this is one of those things where if you're like, oh, I want some exposure to Bitcoin, but I don't know, I don't want to go through all the hassles of cold storage and owning the actual Bitcoin, like having it on my person, then this is a way where you can now buy Bitcoin.
You don't have
Bitcoin.
To put the Bitcoins in your pocket, Joel. You don't have to have it on your purse.
Right. Yeah. Via the...
Okay. I just want to make sure you know.
I don't know all the mechanisms. No, but that's what crypto purists would say, right? Is that you should actually own the Bitcoin. You should have it stored on the proper device and you should have it in your possession, right? Like password protected.
Yeah. All the guys that are waiting on the fall of the United States.
Yeah. So, but other people say, listen, I just think this is a new asset class that I want some exposure to. Mm-hmm. And now it's easier than ever to do that. So via one of these spot Bitcoin ETFs. And, and if you're looking to do that, if you're interested, Matt and I, we always say, keep your exposure to cryptocurrency minimal. It's not that it's not okay to own a little bit. That's totally fine if that's something you're interested in. And if you're doing the boring stuff in a, you know, to a meaningful degree, go for it. But if you, the lowest expense ratio, Matt, because there were like 10 or 11 of these that launched this week, is really important to look for. And so I looked into it just to see like which Bitcoin fund seemed to have the lowest cost. It's one called BITB. So we'll link to that one in the show notes. Like, and again, this is not us saying you should go buy Bitcoin. We don't necessarily think that, but just kind of to put it out there, this is news, it's financial news, and it's worth noting.
Yeah, I'll say that we don't think that you should actively go out there and buy Bitcoin, but if you do own some Bitcoin or want to own some, then that's totally fine.
Yeah.
Specifically, if you keep that under 5% of your overall investment portfolio.
A little low-cost exposure can't hurt. Again, if you're doing all the other things and
yes,
you're doing
yeah,
them
yeah.
regularly and you're doing them well, right? You are maxing on the index fund side of things.
Totally.
And this is just a small sliver of what you do.
Yeah.
Go for it.
You got credit card debt? Don't even think about it.
Right, exactly. No, that shouldn't be on your radar then. All right, Matt, let's keep going on. I don't know if you saw this, Matt. The CEO of Wayfair sent out a memo back in December, and he basically said, hey, company's crushing it, which is great. But then he said, and everyone should get used to working longer hours, which just feels so demoralizing. It feels like a weird interpretation to draw from positive sales data. Hey, guys, we're doing great, and you're going to need to be at your desk more often.
It's like a don't slack off just because we're ahead.
Right.
It sounds like a, I don't know, maybe it could be interpreted as like a fourth quarter kind of pump up pep talk.
Yeah.
Perhaps.
Let's get back at it. Nose to the grindstone, right?
Yeah, exactly.
But he also said, he said, and I quote, blending work and life is not anything to shy away from. And I don't disagree to a certain extent. Like, I love what we do. I love our work. And I feel like our work is more to me than just work. But now is as good a time as any to question that belief about whether or not blending your work and life is something you should be doing more of. And if it's something that you want more of or not, or whether you want more work-life balance this year. Is it your goal to work more in 2024? That might be okay if that's a goal of yours, but not just because your boss says that's how it's going to be. And so I'm sure the CEO of Wayfair is a totally fine guy. This is normal corporate speak. I know. I've been there. I've worked for those companies. They you know, try to get more out of you in all these interesting, seemingly kind ways. But this is also the kind of stuff that gets people thinking about what they actually want out of their lives. It's a phrase like that. It's a retort like that. It's a memo like that from a CEO that makes them question whether or not they want to stick around at a company like that, even if profits are soaring. I think this is a good cause for all of us to take a step back and take the reasonable approach of questioning whether or not the company that we work for, how much we're working, how much we're investing in our career, in our day jobs, like, is it too much? Because for some people, the answer might be yes.
Sure. Okay, so there's an article in Bloomberg about productivity and your personal well-being. And similarly, right? Like it was asking this question about the extent to which those two things are at odds. It's kind of like what we're talking about here. Because obviously, if you're not productive at all, well, you're probably not going to be very happy
if
you're not working. But
the couch potato doesn't necessarily feel ridiculous amounts of self-fulfillment.
Unless they have somehow reached nirvana there on the couch. But let's say, for instance, your job and productivity is your number one priority. Well, you're not going to be maxing out your happiness either, because you're not going to have any time for the other things that most likely matter more to you in life. And so there's a happy medium. It's sort of like we talked about on Wednesday with Michael Easter. Moderation, right? Like that is what's key. But the question, as always, it comes down to what it is that you are optimizing for, because you can guarantee that your employer or that CEO of Wayfair, he is optimizing for profits for his company.
He wants to juice more productivity out of you.
Exactly. The thing is, those desires of that CEO or your boss, it also might coincide with what it is that you're trying to accomplish in your life as well. And there's absolutely nothing wrong with work. It's one of the beautiful things about work, and we talk about this often, but it is a tangible measure of the value that you're able to provide other people. And when you can see it through that lens, you realize how amazing work can be, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because on one hand, you think, oh, well, I just want to be able to provide, I want to do something that feels fulfilling for me as an individual, and I want to help my fellow human being. Well, you combine that with a job, which is like your ability to literally receive tangible dollars,
or
value
income,
for that. Well, that's an amazing thing, and it tells you that you are able to provide value to people. So we're talking about work here, but this is just a call to be intentional about these sorts of questions, because it's just too easy to find yourself doing the same thing on repeat without asking why. Just because your boss is wanting you to do that doesn't necessarily mean that you have to do that. Another thing we talked about with Michael, well, actually, we didn't talk about it. In his book, he talks a lot about adventure, and he talks about the hero's journey.
Yeah.
And that's what we want. We want for you to be asking yourself these questions, and I don't know, I feel like this is like a trope. We want you to be the main character in your own life, like all that kind of crap. But it sounds pithy, but it's also very serious, because it can have long lasting implications as to what it is your life is going to look like.
I think that corporatism and bureaucracy are two of the things that actually give people the kick in the butt that they need to go do something on their own.
It causes them to ask those questions?
Yeah.
Absolutely.
It's like, okay, cool. I kind of liked my job and I kind of like the people I work with, but my goodness, the bureaucracy is getting overwhelming and I feel stifled by it. That is one of the things that actually leads to innovation and to people doing their own thing.
Totally.
I think
agree.
That's a good thing. Sometimes these companies, they get too big, they get too stuffy, and the people who aren't down with that, they're going to go start something interesting or they're going to move on and go to a company that's doing something a little more nimble. Again, not trying to throw Wayfair under the bus. Just saw that. I thought it was an interesting thing and it was worth talking about. Speaking of jobs, Matt, the job market, it's not slow, but it's also not en fuego like it was, right?
It's slowing.
Yeah, yeah. Slowing, right? Which is actually a good thing, right? U.S. job opening actually fell in November to their lowest level since March 21. And in much of 2022, there were 2 job listings for every job seeker.
I remember those days.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Now that's down to 1.4, which isn't a bad thing. It's actually a sign that the economy is normalizing. It was out of whack there for a hot minute. Mm-hmm. And so job switchers, by the way, another consequence is that they're not getting paid the premium they were 12 to 18 months ago to switch. So if you wanted to move down the road, go to a different company, well, you know what? A year and a half ago, you had your pick of the litter and you were going to get a big raise. Today, you're going to get a raise, but not quite as big of a raise as you would have before. So what does that mean for you? Well, if you do want to switch things up on the employment front this year, 1.4 jobs per job seekers. There is still ample opportunity. You're just going to have to work for it, probably harder than you would have had to in 2022.
Exactly.
And you're probably not going to get that pay bump. Maybe that's stratospheric like you would have hoped.
Yeah, the unemployment rate, it's still below 4%, which is near historic lows. So keep that in mind. And by the way, Harvard Business Review, they did a fascinating study about the fairness, or actually the lack thereof, of working from home. They were highlighting the disparity in the research that they found. And the meat of their findings are that the ability to work from home, it actually increases as your education, as your pay level, and as your work experience increase.
Hmm.
And so basically, the further along you are on, you know, within those dimensions, the more likely you'll be applying for jobs that allow you to work from home at least some of the time. And so there's definitely like a level of inequality to working from home. It's fascinating, though, that they're focusing on sort of like the fairness or the disparity of between the different sort of industries out there. Because bottom line, like there are going to be certain industries that allow you to work from home and other industries that don't allow you to. It's not necessarily about, it's just it's the nature of certain jobs. Like imagine if a restaurant owner or somebody was just like, oh, man, I wish I could work from home. No, that's like the entire industry that you're in is very customer facing. You are out there in person. And the flip side of that is true as well. Like it makes me think about somebody who's a computer programmer, or a software engineer. And if they're sitting there at home by themselves working and they're like, oh, man, you know what would be awesome? If I had more colleagues around me, buddies, like work buddies. I don't have work buddies.
Yeah.
Well, dude, like the inherent nature of your job lends itself to you being alone at a computer for like 10 hours a day.
Proverbial water cooler conversations. I want some of those.
I know. Oh, I wish it was like the old days where we're all just farming. I don't know. It seems a little bit silly, but it is important to keep in mind that, yes, there are different things we can pursue if we're looking for higher levels of the ability to work from home. But that bottom line, that there are some industries that just don't provide that as an option.
That's right. You want to be work at the grocery store? There's no work from home at the grocery store. Like that's just not how it works. Yeah,
exactly.
But it is interesting, and I think that's true. Like those three things, Matt: you increase your education, your pay level, and your work experience, and you're in the right sector. That's going to increase your chances of being able to work from home if that's important to you.
Yeah, I just thought of something else too, which is like it makes me think about what if everybody were restaurant owners in our little town here?
Mm-hmm.
That kind of seems like a weird place to live, right? Or like what if everybody were like computer programmers or accountants that worked from home or something like that? Doesn't that sound like a terrible place to live?
You want a mix.
You want the mix. Like the variety that we have within our culture and society, I think is what makes towns and places that we choose to live, that's what makes it beautiful.
Sure.
And so I don't know. I think there's a place for all types of jobs,
Whether
or not you're working from home or not.
Sometimes at different points in time, too. You might be,
exactly.
Work from home works great for me now. And then it's like, wait a second, I want to get back in the office. I miss the culture. And as we've said many times,
we don't have some sort of like caste system where you're locked into being a hairdresser for the rest of your life and you actually hate people.
Yeah, yeah. Well, we've also said that in particular for younger How to Money listeners, being in the office more is in all likelihood going to help your career. There's been a few different things that have come out just saying that the more you're in the office, the more you're in front of your boss, the more you're contributing in person, the more likely you are to get a raise, the more likely you are to get a promotion. So especially if you're in your 20s, I get the desire to work from home. And I'm not saying that like you shouldn't do it at all, but I'm just saying there's trade-offs that come with working from
home.
Yeah. All right, let's talk about 401ks for a second, Matt. Roth 401ks in particular, 9 in 10 employers now offer a Roth 401k option these days, which is good news, especially in those early earning years. That can make the most sense as an option of which account to go into. And there's an interesting change that started January 1st, which now allows you to get the match from your employer in Roth form too, because back in the day, it used to be you contribute to the Roth, but then your employer is contributing essentially to a traditional 401k with those match dollars. This feature might be harder to find, even though it's now legal, just because it's so new and only recently came into being. But in years past, there was, like I said, that traditional bucket and the Roth bucket. If you were contributing to one, well, your employer was contributing to the other. Now you can get all that money into a Roth if your employer says, hey, yeah, we're signing up for this. This is what we're doing. I'd be curious to know what's coming out from HR emails across the country. And for our listeners who have a Roth 401k option, again, most people have a Roth 401k option, but are their employers now doing this and sticking their match dollars inside the Roth 401k too? If you're listening and that has happened, your employer's already basically said, hey, we're going to do this, please let us know, because that is a big perk, funneling even more money into that tax-advantaged account that'll never be taxed again.
Yeah, especially if you are, like, again, I feel like we're targeting all the younger workers out there. If you are early on in your career and you don't have a high income right now, but you have the ability to pay taxes on those contributions at a fairly low level, and knowing that you will never be taxed on any of that money ever again, that's pretty huge.
Kind of front-loading some of that sacrifice, letting those dollars grow for decades and decades.
Exactly.
Never, you know, the growth, and then when you take that money out, not going to be taxed.
Yeah. That being said, listen back. We talked with Sean Mullaney last year, and we kind of debated the merits of going with a Roth 401k versus a traditional. And Sean specifically, he's the FI tax guy, so he's operating within the framework of financial independence.
Yeah.
And he has some great thoughts. We'd recommend for you to listen back to that one. We'll link to it in the show notes. But
yeah, the Roth 401k might not always be the best.
But there is a both and approach.
Yeah.
Again, Joel, it's all about moderation. Yeah. It's not going too hard in one direction or the other. And by the way, if you are trying to figure out where to open an IRA, and we're talking about Roth 401ks, let's talk about IRAs. Well, companies like Robinhood, SoFi, they are trying to get you to open an account with them by offering the only match separate from your employer.
FinTech companies, man, they
know how to do it.
They're like, we see what Vanguard and Fidelity have been able to build. Now we want those dollars
they
coming
want
in
a piece
here.
Of the pie. Robinhood started doing this a few months back, and they've actually seen a lot of wealthy customers taking advantage of the 1% that they're offering on all transfers, which is pretty awesome. But then actually, and we talked about this on an Ask How to Money episode, but their gold account, which it does cost money, but you get a 3% match, which is basically unheard of.
Yeah, that's the paid account. I forget, what, $5 a month or something like that?
Yeah, it's 60. 5 times 12 is 60. That's always my trick. $60 a year. SoFi, they are offering a 2% match for limited time on whatever you stick in an IRA, as long as you do that before tax day.
Yeah, and that's a free account with SoFi.
Bottom line, we think these are pretty cool, but they're also a little bit gimmicky, because, yes, you are going to be able to make, an extra 160
if you max out with
max
a 2%.
Out,
yeah.
But then you got your, it's 200 something, but then minus your $60 in annual fees, I guess. But just keep in mind, there are hurdles that you're going to have to jump through, and you're going to have to keep your money there for many years before that match, before you vested with Robinhood.
Yeah.
It's kind of like switching banks in order to gain an extra like 0.2%. We don't want you to do that, but definitely switch for an extra 2%. Maybe the biggest benefit with some of these offerings is assuming and hoping that they're going to offer this forever, right?
Yeah.
Because if you're thinking about it over the course of years and even decades, well, yeah, you're thinking this is a slam dunk. Nobody else is doing this. But that's not necessarily guaranteed. And,
exactly.
And that's the part that feels a little like, man,
I think this was
going to be a bait and switch?
I think if this was a match for life, it's a different thing. Like even this 2% thing from SoFi, it's a limited time only. Do it by tax day 2024. And if you don't, well, guess what? This thing goes away. And so are they going to continue this thing in perpetuity, or are they going to realize pretty quickly, wait a second, we're losing a lot of money on this?
Yeah.
I don't know. So I just don't, for me at this point in time, I'm not going to make the switch, but I understand why some people would.
Yeah. Well, and especially if you are opening an IRA for the first time. Oh, absolutely. I think it totally makes sense. Hey, you don't have to go through making the transfer happen, setting up yet another account. I think for folks, especially who are just getting started, I think it can make a lot of sense.
Again, the other warning, though, if you're doing business with Robinhood, I love this match. You like this match. It's cool, man. It's the first of its kind, and it's the only time that not your employer is incentivizing you to save for retirement. It's really cool. But Robinhood is also set up to get you to trade frequently. That is kind of how the interface works. Mm-hmm. It's pretty smooth interface. It's really cool. But that really cool interface, if it gets you to log in more, make more trades, well, this 1% match could be short-sighted. It could be cheap, not frugal, right?
It could end up costing you more in the long run.
Yeah, losing money by making moves with your money that and with your investments that you shouldn't be doing.
Exactly. Yeah, because you know what you can buy over in Robinhood? Bitcoin and Ethereum, which is why I opened my Robinhood account years ago.
Same.
It's because they have the ability to make those purchases, and that's, again, that is not where you want 95% of your retirement funds. Maybe just a little
bit,
sure, but beyond that, yeah, don't be tempted into investing in ways that Joel would not approve of. But Joel,
I don't want to have to come to your house and wag my finger Dikembe Mutombo style in your face.
We've got more personal finance stories to get to. We're going to talk about Mr. Beast, like we mentioned at the top. We're going to talk about lifestyle creep and a couple other stories as well. We'll get to all of that right after this.
Asking the right questions can greatly impact your future, especially when it comes to your finances. So, if you're looking for a financial advisor you can trust, certified financial planner professionals are committed to acting in your best interest. They are committed to high ethical standards and even had to pass a rigorous exam before they could become a CFP professional.
They offer financial planning and services that take a more comprehensive view of your financial and personal circumstances and are customized for your needs. Certified financial planner professionals can offer advice on a wide range of issues like reviewing your investment portfolio's allocation, handling an inheritance, rolling over a company retirement plan, building education savings, and so much more.
That's why it's got to be a CFP. Find your CFP professional at letsmakeaplan.org. I'm guessing that a lot of listeners are starting to solidify their summer travel plans. We always like to get the families together, Matt, for a week at the beach. Every single summer, we've already got that trip to St. Simons on the calendar. Pumped for that. But sometimes those vacations get expensive. So what better way to offset some of those costs than to have your home earning some money while you're away?
That's right. Why let it sit empty when it could be earning extra income? It's the financially smart thing to do. So think it through. Maybe you've got some extra space in your home, or maybe you have an entire house to host, or maybe you're just going on vacation and your home is sitting empty. In every case, you can Airbnb it. You already have the space, so it won't be a huge adjustment.
I mean, the way I see it, if you're not using your space, you have two options. You can let it just sit there empty, or you do some optimizing and make some money off it. Really, if you think about it, you already have an Airbnb. You just need to start using it. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host. Spring cleaning is kind of an annual rite of passage. We've all got to do it, minimize the junk that we have in our house. Emily and I, we just cleaned our closets out. It took hours, but it was so worth it. Now we've only got stuff in there that we love, and it's easier to find everything too. And so, you know, while cleaning your closets is helpful, well, there's something else you can do for your family this spring. Shopping for life insurance with Policy Genius, for example, is a really important part of your financial planning for the year.
That's right. Yeah. And here is the thing that's important to remember, because you might be thinking you don't need to check out Policy Genius because you've got a policy through work. But even if you have a life insurance policy through your job, it may not offer you enough protection for your family's needs, and it may not follow you if you leave your job. With Policy Genius, you can find life insurance policies that start at just $292 per year for $1 million of coverage. Some options offer same-day approval and avoid unnecessary medical exams. Policy Genius works for you, not the insurance companies, and that means they don't have an incentive to recommend one insurer over another, so you can trust their guidance.
Save time and money and provide your family with a financial safety net using Policy Genius. Head to policygenius.com to get your free life insurance quotes and see how much you could save. That's policygenius.com. All right, Matt, the Friday flight continues. Of course, we got to get to the ludicrous headline of the week. This one comes from TechCrunch, and the headline read, "The new American dream is to get Mr. Beast to pay off your debt." And I kind of laughed at this one a little bit, and then I also cried afterwards.
Yeah.
A little bit of both, right? Just because I was like, I do not want to live in a world where this is the dream. Although, I kind of think what Mr. Beast does is cool.
Yeah.
Some of his videos, I've watched maybe a few, but...
Most folks probably know Mr. Beast. We kind of talked about it at the beginning. He's a YouTube creator. He puts on these elaborate, ridiculous stunts where he's basically giving away money. In some cases, a ton of money. Hundreds of thousands of dollars.
Sometimes he will just show up on a college campus and say, how much is your tuition this year? And the kid will be like, $36,000. And he'll hand them a briefcase of money.
Yeah.
To the tune of 36 grand. or he'll be like, that's 40. I rounded up. And so... It's kind of cool that he does stuff like that, like that he uses
very cool.
his influence. And
I think it's 100% cool that if that's how he wants to operate his business.
It's a capitalistic endeavor on his part that actually has benefit for a lot of other people. But are we in that much of a capitalist hellscape that we need Mr. Beast to pay off everyone else's debt? I don't think so. Like, are we living in this real-life Squid Game where we're hoping for some sort of invite, right, to win a bundle of money because... That's the only way out of the insane amount of debt we've gotten into? I don't think so. I guess basically waiting for Mr. Beast to come around Ed McMahon style with a big check to your door to help you pay off your debt, that is pie in the sky, hope and belief. And let's say even if you somehow got cast into one of his videos, one, are you going to outlast your hungry, maybe starving neighbor or your competition to win the grand prize? The truth is probably not. So, you know, while the Mr. Beast gimmick plays out and a few rando people strike it rich on his site via those videos, it's on par with winning the lottery. It's not going to happen. So I think some people see Mr. Beast and kind of what he's doing and they say, I went in on that. I want my debt paid off overnight. Well, yeah, wouldn't it be nice? But the truth is, if you want your debt paid off, you got to come up with a plan, and now is as good a time as any to get started.
An actual plan. That's what I hate most about this is that it's just relying on luck, and it removes the agency from the equation. Kind of like, again, going back to what we were saying at the beginning of the last section, with when it comes to jobs and what you're willing to work and what you're willing to take on and not take on, there's not a plan if you're relying on luck, if you're relying on the luck of the draw, as opposed to funneling and directing your efforts towards something that is actually going to lead to, to meaningful change in your life.
Because the longer you sit there and don't take action, guess what? That debt persists and it gets worse and your situation gets worse the longer you don't make steps to in the right direction.
Yeah, while at the same time acknowledging that I think any success out there always has some degree of luck, right? Like, there's nobody out there that's like 100% purely refined, fully made, like on their own, like where it's something that they were able to completely determine. There are always different outside forces that play into that. But in this case,
it's just like Warren Buffett says,
100% relying on that luck.
Yeah, we've all won the lottery just by where we were born.
Sure,
right. So most of our listeners inside the United States, there's a whole lot of benefit that accrues to you just by the fact that you live here.
Yeah.
And I just want to put in one plug too, Matt. If you are the kind of person who's in debt up to your eyeballs and like you are the kind who's saying like, I hope Mr. Beast knocks on my door. Well, the first proactive step you should probably take is to talk to someone at a nonprofit counseling center, debt counseling center, Money Management International. Those folks are great. Go check out their site, find a counseling center near you. If you're in debt that badly, this is where you need to turn. It's not going to be easy, and it's not going to be like some sort of gift payoff of your debt, but this is the way you're going to be able to get it under control.
Totally. So, speaking of debt, did you see that Robert Kiyosaki? He's got like $1 billion in debt, and is just like,
yes.
I'm not worried about it because if I go under, my bank goes under.
Yeah, basically, it's Robert Kiyosaki on steroids being weird again. We actually replayed an episode at the end of the year about how we feel about debt and the strategic use of debt. Mm-hmm. So we actually kind of sort of agree with Mr. Kiyosaki to a certain extent when it comes to using debt wisely. Let's say you have $1 billion in debt financed at 3%, but you have, $10 billion of value in a real estate portfolio. Guess what?
Different story.
I'm not really worried about what's going on with your debt, and you shouldn't be either. But I don't know what his balance sheet looks like, but I would just say this is a good reminder that debt can be used well if used to buy income-producing assets, but also moderation on the debt front and know the difference between good debt and bad debt. And it's not easy, right? Like, that's why so many people, the people who make the biggest headlines, are either the ones who say debt is a gift to you, like Robert Kiyosaki does, or the person who says debt is dumb and you're an idiot for even attempting to use debt in any way, form, or fashion. Those extremes get all the press, but the truth lies somewhere in the middle.
Yep.
And if you can use debt effectively to build wealth, you just got to be really, really careful when you're doing it.
Exactly. Yeah. Don't hear us point to him or mention him as an example to follow. We're highlighting him because that's what we want you to avoid.
Yeah.
And by the way, so as we're talking about debt,
not that he has nothing good to share.
Yeah.
But
there's some stuff.
I wouldn't listen to him.
There's some nuggets of wisdom.
Yeah.
So it makes me think of, we've got a new article on the site about what it takes to invest in real estate, the different ways you can do that. It's an awesome article. We'll make sure to link to that as well. If that's something that you're like, all right, I want to know basically all there is to know about not only finding a property to invest in, but how to manage it from like soup to nuts, basically.
Financing, hiring a property manager, all the above. It's a very long form, how to money influenced way of like how to go about buying a rental property.
Exactly. Yeah. So speaking of housing, there's a really long article in the journal about how messed up the home and auto insurance markets are right now. And if you live in California or Florida in particular, you don't need us to tell you that. State Farm, for instance, I think they're putting through average rate hikes of 20% this year in California. But rate increases, they're actually happening across the country in the double-digit percentage range year over year. And also, we're kind of railing on potential, like the, what'd you say? You said like the capitalistic hellscape that we that we live in. This isn't just an attempt by insurance companies to get rich. They have been losing money because there have been bigger payouts over the last couple of years, in particular in states that have experienced a lot of hurricanes or fires.
So it seems like, oh, it's just cash grab from the insurance companies. But in reality, when you look at their numbers, they've not been doing so hot. They have to make up for losses they've incurred.
Stuff costs money.
And heard of inflation? these companies, these insurance companies are having to deal with that when it comes to rebuilds and stuff like that, too.
Yeah. So here's a line from the article. For many Americans, getting insurance for both their cars and homes has gone from a routine, generally manageable expense to a do or die ordeal that can strain household budgets. I feel like that was pretty spot on based on the numbers that we've been seeing, but as well as the different anecdotes we've been hearing.
Yeah, I guess like just because it's justifiable doesn't mean it's not shocking to our listeners, right? It is. It can be overwhelming if you're saying, oh, I'm making financial progress, started funneling money towards my Roth IRA. I even got that 3% match because I'm doing Robinhood Gold or whatever, you know? and you're so happy about what you're doing. And then boom, you get this dropped in your lap and it's a 20% increase on your homeowner's insurance and a 24% increase on your car insurance. And you're just like, how do I get ahead as these bills continue popping up? And I get that reaction because it is frustrating. So we'll offer the best advice we can to save on insurance here. One, the best way to save on your insurance bill is to shop around. Every insurer sets rates differently. So use a site like Policy Genius or reach out to an independent insurance agent via a site like trustedchoice.com. That is the lowest hanging fruit. That's the best potential way to save the most dollars. Let's say you get a massive increase in the mail, though. I would just say don't take it lying down. Like, loyalty doesn't pay. Like, you don't get better rates because you've been with an insurance company longer. Typically, that typically is the opposite is true. And some folks, Matt, they might be tempted to lower their coverage limits, but that's setting you up for another potential problem if you have to file a claim, more money out of pocket, right? Another interesting way to save is by self-insuring more, right? And so that can mean increasing your deductible on your car or your home. That can massively reduce the premiums that you pay, but it does mean you have to have more money in cash in the savings account. That's a tactic I've taken, Matt. Didn't help me out when a tree fell through my house last March. But still, overall, over the many decades, it's going to save me money on insurance. And one other thought is to ditch a car from your life, right? Because insuring fewer things is going to reduce your insurance costs. So let's say you've got 3 cars in your driveway. Can you get that down to 2? That will save you money just by having fewer rides in your life, less to insure. Yeah, none of those tips is like some sort of silver bullet going to save you millions. But hopefully, you know, one of those
over decades will be millions.
Maybe doing 2 of those, maybe it will have an impact.
Okay, you talked about having 3 cars in the driveway. That actually makes me think about lifestyle creep. We did a deep dive on this topic way back. I think it was episode 374. But man, it is a consistently pernicious way that folks end up hamstringing the progress that they're trying to make toward their different financial goals. And basically, like, the heart of lifestyle creep is there's a little treat that you used to indulge yourself in, and maybe you would do it occasionally, but yeah. Now it's something that becomes routine. And guess what? Because it's routine, it's also no longer special. And all of a sudden, the cost for you to exist on this earth has gone up every single month.
Yeah, it's not the occasional latte treat. It's the now I deserve a latte every morning.
It's the or every Monday morning. Like I mean, because I'll admit, like there are certain things that we do in life where we are knowingly and intentionally entering into lifestyle creep. So like every Monday morning, you and I, like we go to our favorite local coffee shop here and we enjoy a nice coffee. It's also a way for us to, A, it's a business expense.
Stretch our legs in the morning, too.
But get the blood flowing, and B, just to catch up, you know, as buds from the weekend. But I think that's fine if that is something that you are proactively or intentionally or entering, like a transaction that you're entering into with your eyes wide open. And as long as you don't have other goals that you're trying to accomplish, right? Because that's when, like, that's the trade-off, essentially, that you're making.
Yeah.
If there are other things that you want to do with your money, well, then that's when lifestyle creep in particular can be this pernicious thing.
Yeah, it comes in and it actually robs you of your bigger goals, maybe your long-term future goals, because you feel like you deserve the thing in the here and now, even though you haven't budgeted for it. That's kind of the heart of lifestyle creep, I think.
It's like death by a thousand cuts.
Yeah.
Like each one of these small things seems like it's not that big of a deal, but what if you didn't have all
this?
But
then you can't take that sweet family vacation without going into debt that you wanted to, because all those things do add up.
Exactly.
And it's not that it's not okay to enjoy the fruit of your labor. But it's often those decisions that we make in the heat of the moment that derail us, right? Even if it's not some sort of, I bought a new car today, or, I just booked some ridiculously expensive cruise. By the way, if you want to book a ridiculously expensive cruise, stay tuned for next week. We're going to talk to a cruise expert on the show. It's going to be a lot of fun.
A ridiculously affordable cruise.
Ridiculously affordable, that's right.
We'll be talking about.
That's right. But it's always important to be aware of the potential for lifestyle creep in our lives. And maybe plan out a few elements of your life that you want to, kind of like you're talking about, Matt, intentionally upgrade as your financial position changes. You get a 20% pay raise. You don't have to funnel all that into your 401k. Nobody's saying that. Matt and I aren't saying that. Like, you should be able to enjoy some of those dollars in the here and now, right? But just plan out how you're going to spend those. Know the ways in which you do want to elevate your lifestyle. And I think that can help keep other lifestyle creep villains from kind of coming in, ruining your progress, taking that money that should have gone to other stuff that you actually care about more. Sometimes it's like that immediate thing that lifestyle creep is the most tempting version, right? It's like, how can I upgrade my lifestyle right now? It's that Stanley water bottle at Target or something like that, which we should talk about Stanley water bottles more.
So dumb.
I
feel like that's the perfect example of, and granted, that's not very much money, but sure, it's more than a cup of coffee. But like, it's the kind of thing that gets thrust in front of you because, in this case, like popular culture or for whatever reason, the influencers believe that this is something that everybody needs, as opposed to deciding for yourself, hey, what is it for you that's going to bring about the most happiness?
Yeah.
That's what these are the questions that we want you asking yourself, as opposed to being like spoon fed what it is that you should think and believe.
Yeah, did you even think that you needed a water vessel upgrade until you saw the videos floating around a stand, or until one of your best friends showed up with one? And then you're like, that does look nice.
Big old handle. Right. I love it.
Delightful straw. I mean, if you want to own a Stanley, do your thing, but just do it because that was a choice you made. To the exclusion of other things you could have done with that money.
Absolutely.
Not because you mindlessly were like, time for me to be fancy and cool, just like everybody else who's got one.
Yeah.
But, all right. So we're going to get in trouble with
the Stanley
crowd. I
think that last rant is the closest I got to ever saying sheeple.
Now you said it.
On the podcast. But I didn't.
It's been an interesting...
I caught myself.
Interesting though. Trend to watch. All right, that's going to do it for this episode. We hope you have a great weekend. Can't wait to see you back here next week. More great money-saving content, including, like we said, that conversation with a cruise expert, Ilana of Life Well Cruised. Matt and I, we've never been on a cruise before. We'll see if she can convince us to go on one. But Matt, that's going to do it for this one. Until next time, best friends out.
Best friends out.
Upswell Marketing would like to remind you that when customers choose your small business, they're really choosing you. So focus on super serving your existing customers and let Upswell handle the pipeline generation of new leads and customers.
Upswell specializes in developing customized direct response campaigns and is now offering a no obligation free assessment of your current marketing strategies.
Not to mention, new customers also receive 15% off their first order when they mention that they heard about Upswell on this podcast. For more information, visit upswellmarketing.com. That's upswellmarketing.com.
From BBC Radio 4, Britain's biggest paranormal podcast is going on a road trip.
I thought in that moment, oh my God, we've summoned something from this board.
This is Uncanny USA.
He says, somebody's in the house, and I screamed.
Listen to Uncanny USA wherever you get your BBC podcasts, if you dare.
Supercharge your work decks with AI-powered Canva presentations. All you do is start with a prompt. You describe your presentation in a few words, and Canva presentations will generate captivating slides that you can then customize in seconds.
Canva presentations are designed for every workplace and every department. Whether you work in sales, marketing, HR, ops, and more, Canva presentations can generate any deck you want for work. Sales decks, marketing presentations, onboarding plans, you name it. Any department can save time on any presentation with AI.
Generate slides in seconds with Canva presentations at canva.com, designed for work.